Well, Dan really likes wine this week in Scotland on a beautiful, well, no, not beautiful at all. It's grey, misty and rainy, but it's typically Scottish, which adds to the authenticity of location and means it's a very good idea to be inside drinking some good red wine. What makes that even better is doing so in terrific company. Now, if I were to introduce my guest with full CV and bio, he'd be here for the next 4 days, but I will give him a title that I suspect 3 or 4 years ago, even he would never have thought of, because if Piers Morgan, I had welcomed you as YouTube starlet, you probably would have shaken your head even more than you normally do in my company.
The Justin Bieber of journalism is how I like to phrase it, yeah. No, it's, yeah, I agree. I would have thought you were bonkers, but it's an interesting thing. Lovely to see you again, by the way. And apologies for resembling a drowned rat, but as you rightly observed, even the short walk from the Russocks down to here has turned me into a drowned rat. Yeah, it's interesting, you know, and someone said to me the other day, why did you go just into YouTube? You know, what happened to television and all that? I said, well, YouTube is the new television. And if you don't believe me, ask young people. So my kids are 32, 28, 24, 13, and none of them watch television. They just watch YouTube. Or they watch television stuff through the YouTube app on their TV. So there's been a real cultural, generational shift from the kind of thing that we have always watched, and I probably will continue to YouTube. And YouTube is going to be, I'd say, within 2 or 3 years, the dominant way that most people watch television, conventional television, in the world on their smart TV. So it's a very radical change. And I'm just, as usual, seizing a shameless opportunity to ride the wave.
I remember we spoke about this over lunch last year, and you were at that stage kind of taking the final step into this is actually where I'm going to be. And a few years ago, that would have been unheard of, because the dream of anybody in the broader entertainment space was, I want to be on the pinnacle of television as we know it.
Yeah.
And the internet was this kind of background space that if you couldn't quite make it to the top, well, that might be a side alley. And that's flipped quite dramatically.
Well, what's happened is you're just seeing individuals like me, but there are many others doing it on the left and the right. I'm more centrist, really, in the way I look at news and politics and stuff.
The left and the right would definitely agree with you on that.
Well, the left and the right hate me with mutual passion, which I think is the perfect place for any journalist to find themselves.
An equal opportunity annoyance.
Exactly. But it's, yeah, I think you're going to see a lot more individuals basically setting up their own media companies, networks, if you like. You know, I've got a show called Piers Morgan Uncensored. We have 4.2 million subscribers now. You know, that's the sort of thing you dream about, isn't it, Dan? Oh.
We're sitting on 42 at the moment. It's my mum, her friend Ethel, Agatha, and shout out to Agatha.
You know what, though? I'll get your numbers up with this, don't you worry. But it's, and you know, we're getting millions of views per piece of content. It's very global, 50% America. We aim at an American audience. But I'm going to roll out the Uncensored brand. So you're going to start seeing History Uncensored, Crime Uncensored, Royals Uncensored, Sport Uncensored, Golf Uncensored. As many verticals as I can think of. And what you'll rapidly see emerging from that is a media network, if you like, only it's all driven through the prism of YouTube. So it's going to be exciting, but it is definitely the way to go, because as with anything in life, right, if you look at what young people are doing, that's the future. And you don't want to be the guy where people say, well, you were the future once. Right, Dan?
It's been said many times. Again, the aforementioned mum. Look, when we took the wine show, we had the option of taking it to television. We'd run the Dan Nichols Show on television for a long time and very happily. But one of the obstacles was, well, it's linked to where that station is geographically and what their time slots are. And there are lots of controls in place. Suddenly on YouTube, you are speaking as much to the person sitting in London as to the person sitting in a village in Peshawar who wants to
watch it they want to watch it. I mean, it's the flexibility.
Yeah.
You know, young people, they don't want to have to be told, you've got to come in at 8 o'clock and watch something on television, because that's the time it's scheduled by a linear television network. They want to just watch it when they feel like it. They want to watch it on their phone when they're on the train or on the commute to work or whatever it may be. They may want to watch it a week later. That's the beauty of a YouTube channel, is, you know, we do very little live because there's no need. Our consumers, our viewers, don't want necessarily live stuff. They just want to be compelling and interesting and challenge them a bit.
Yeah, outside of live sport, I think that is absolutely spot on. And what it also does is allow you to focus on far more important things like travelling the world drinking great wine.
Correct.
Which
is where we come to here.
Which is where we come to. And we are part of a WhatsApp group that I keep threatening to leave because at least once a day a Piers Morgan update comes in because you're having breakfast and it's a 61 Lafitte in LA and this extraordinary collection of wine. It's more than just you like to have a nice glass. Mm. There is clearly a real passion for wine. How did that start? What are your first memories of falling in love with wine?
I grew up in a pub, so let's start with that. And both sets of grandparents were publicans too, so there was no escape from pub life, which I loved, I still do. Something very, like, particularly when I used to live in America for a few years, the thing I missed most was a pub, especially a country style
pub. It's something that's never translated to anywhere
else. Anywhere else in the world. People try, you get pubs in New York, but they're not the same, right? You get pubs in LA, they're definitely not the same. So I really miss pubs, but growing up in a pub, just, you know, whether it's beer or wine or whatever it was, that was the life I grew up in for a long time. And my dad has only ever given me two bits of advice, but both are absolute worldies. One was always be polite to police officers, which I thought was brilliant advice, and I recommend it particularly to your view. And the second one
was... Many of whom are watching this in a small room.
If you're watching this from a small padded cell, then you didn't take the advice in time. But it is good advice. And the second bit of advice was always drink the best... He said, always drink the best French wine you can afford. So I was reared really with a love of French wine through the prism of my dad. And it remains my main abiding passion is great French wine, particularly great white Burgundy, great red Bordeaux. And I'm very lucky. I've got some friends who have amazing cellars. We get together occasionally. Dan Wallace, you've had on your show, is one of them. And we just taste the greatest wines ever made. And it's amazing. But I also love great South African wine. I love great Italian wine. Some lovely Italian wine with Rick Lewis, one of the other Dunhill guys at Little Italy. And it was absolutely delicious. And yeah, Spanish wine, one of my favorite restaurants is Cambio de Tercio in Chelsea in London. And they have amazing Spanish wine there. So I'm an all comers when it comes to good, really good wine. What I don't like is cheap, nasty wine. And I'm in a very lucky position where I never have to drink it again, hopefully. So unless this particular interview ends up dragging me down to that your kind of palate level, I'm hoping that will be the case.
I'll do my best. The parallel between the show, the guests you have, and the wine you drink, the big name, we've got a Kardashian on the show, we've got Donald Trump on the show. That's your big Bordeaux, your Romani Conti, your Lafite Latour, your Malinu, your Sardi. But often I find with wine, as great as those wines are, there is an interest or an excitement or an undiscovered joy in that bottle of Greek wine that I wasn't expecting to be so good. Is that similar to, well, I've got all these big guys on the show, but I've also got this up-and-coming young author from Hungary who turns out to be this absolute gem and delight of an interview?
That's a brilliant question, because it's so true, is that when I look at my channel and the most watched interviews that I've done since we went fully digital, you know, you'd think maybe Donald Trump or Kanye West, or I went to Kyiv and interviewed President Zelensky 4 months into the war in Ukraine. You know, these are all huge interviews. Cristiano Ronaldo, one of the biggest interviews in the last few years for any sport, when he left Manchester United because of the interview. But actually, the one that got the most views was with a guy I'd never really heard of. It was a guy called Bassem Youssef. He was the Egyptian John Stewart, if you know John Stewart from American television. And he had a huge following on television in Egypt. Then he left when the military coup happened. Ended up in LA, used to go to the comedy store and stuff, and has become a very sharp, acerbic commentator, particularly on the Israel-Hamas war. And he came on a few weeks into the war, and he did what I can only call a savagely dark comedic interview with me, which it took me a few minutes to work out what he was doing. But it was all heavily sarcastic, brilliantly executed, I have to say. And it absolutely blew up on the internet. 23 million people watched that interview on my channel. And I then went to Los Angeles and interviewed him again at the Comedy Store. for 2 hours, where we did a much longer interview, where he really went through the whole history of the Israel-Palestine conflict, albeit from a very pro-Palestine stance. And it was really interesting. And that got 12 million people watching it. So that guy was somebody, I think I'd interviewed him for about 5 minutes before over something and didn't really know much about him, didn't really know who he was. He was certainly the unexpected wine joy, if you like, in terms of the impact when that landed. So that can happen a lot. Little things can suddenly blow up when you least expect them. And it often isn't the ones where you think, well, that's a banker, and sometimes they are, and sometimes they're not so good. It's the little joys, and I think the same about wine. Just so, it's so right. I used to go to a restaurant in Wandsworth in South London called Chez Bruce, and it was notable because it used to be called Harvey's. And when it was Harvey's, two of the guys working there at the same time were Marco Pierre White and Gordon Ramsay. And the third one was Bruce Poole, who then turned into Chez Bruce. And they had a sommelier there. And he was absolutely brilliant. He used to find like weird Rieslings and weird wines from all around Europe and Eastern Europe and things. And he'd say, just try this. And it'd be really cheap. It'd be absolutely mouth-wateringly delicious. So I think the answer is, if you know what you're doing and you know where to look and you have a really good palate and you're really quite expert about wine, you never need to spend the big money on the big blockbusters. You can actually drink incredible wine at a really reasonable price. The problem is, to get to the level that he was at, you've got to drink a lot of wine.
This is research I'm prepared to do, Peter, yes. And I feel you are as well. There's also an element with wine and with interviewing people. I'm a big fan of blind tastings. I'm hosting dinners, hosting events, not because I want to catch people out, although in certain cases that is great fun, but more because the moment we see a label, we judge, and I want people to take that wine or what it is. And it's a little harder to do when you are interviewing somebody because you know who is in front of you, but you have to do your best to come from that point of objectivity.
Well, I had a moment, actually, talking of that, when I was doing Good Morning Britain, and it was a wine store in Mayfair called Hedonism. You probably know it.
No,
amazing,
well,
amazing.
I was there this week, actually.
Right, well, so you know it very well. And I kept talking about my love of great wine. They went, well, why don't we test old Morgan's palate then? I was like, uh-oh. So they had a 1975 Petrus, I think it was, and they had a 20 quid bottle of stuff, you know, French Bordeaux, just regular plonk, and it was blind, and I had to say live on air, live tasting, and by the way, I'm tasting this at 8 a.m. live tasting, which one was the, and if I guessed correctly, I could keep the Petrus. If it was the Petrus, I got to keep the Petrus. Imagine the tension there. One's like a 5 grand bottle of wine, one's a 20 quid bottle of wine, but it was instantaneous. My palate just kicked in, a bit like my golf does at the Dunhill. Doesn't matter how badly I've played all season, it's just when you get up here,
something,
you're playing
happens
at the elite level, somehow my palate kicked in and I knew immediately which one it was. Just went, that is the Petrus. And it was, and nestling in my cellar now is a 1975 bottle of Petrus, which I will savour when I finally get to drink it. So that was a big moment, because if I failed that, pretty much all credibility in the
end
wine
of your wine
has gone.
Yeah. Immediately.
And honestly, it was the other wine was good for 20 quid. It was a little bit like being in a roulette wheel and sticking everything on red and just, you got a 50-50 shot.
The wine adventures that you've had, and there have been many, have taken you to different parts of the world. You mentioned a number of those great restaurants. For me, a great bottle is amplified by the company, by the context, where I am, the food, the people. What are a couple of those wine memories, from swanning about on yachts with Elon to skipping through Hollywood?
Well, none with Donald Trump, because he doesn't drink.
Not at all.
So he's never touched a drop of alcohol in his life.
Which might speak to one or two of the problems.
Yeah.
What are some of those, when you think back, the memories that you have where wine has brought together special people, a special occasion?
I mean, I would say Club Saint-Consanque in Saint-Tropez, which if people know it, it's an amazing outdoor restaurant that's pretty well open in the summer months there. Everyone gravitates. If you're in the region on the Riviera in the summer, everyone goes to Club Saint-Consanque, and you see like Elton John and Alan Sugar and all these people. I go there with Dame Joan Collins, who is the most quintessentially wonderful grand dame, really, of British actresses. And we go there, we always have a really nice bottle of wine. It doesn't really matter what it is, because actually the wine is the kind of accompanying music to the great conversation where Joan will tell us all the great Hollywood stories and everything else. And we'll be joined by various people if there are other tables. Joan knows everybody. So they're always very special, I think, when we go there. And I've also been there with family and other friends and so on. It's just a very special place of bringing people together. Amanda Holden. I had an absolutely riotous lunch there with Amanda Holden and David Coulthard, the Formula One racing driver. Very dangerous drinker. But that's a place I would say where the wine is good, but it doesn't have to be really good. You're not spending buckets on the wine. The food is good, but it's not historically great or anything like that. It's just the whole vibe is brilliant. And I think that often to me, having that kind of lunch where you don't drink wine, to me would be like, what's the point? You know, after we do this, we're going to the seafood restaurant here, this round the back on the 18th green there, at the old course here, the home of golf, around the back of the most famous green in golf history. And we'll get stuck into some really amazing food, some great wines. But again, the company there, the wine, you don't have to have 61 Latours. It would be lovely if you've got one up your sleeve, Dan. But actually, it's more about the company and the food and the ambiance and the view. To me, it's all of those things. You know, my wife's half French, and the French get this so right. You know, they basically build their lives around that. You know, how do we create magic in terms of food, wine, ambiance and all that? I think they do it better than anybody in the world, probably. And that, to me, is it's about all the ingredients. So I'm very lucky. I get to drink. I came over with Amit Bhatia. We call it Amit Airlines.
It's a terrific airline.
It's a terrific airline. It's just one plane, and it's absolutely stupendous. And the lovely waitress came around with a bottle. I actually misquoted it on my Instagram, which I've been mercilessly attacked for, not least by Anton Rupert, actually, first thing this morning. Piers, that is not a Mouton Rothschild. It's a Lafite.
It's a Lafite Rothschild.
It's a Lafite Rothschild.
The 91, if memory
Now, the
serves.
Truth, it was a, I think it was a 90, actually.
It was a 90.
Yeah, but the bottom line is, I knew once I'd posted it, but in the Instagram game, if it's up there on your story for like 2 hours, to try and drag it down when you've already driven a lot of traffic, you know, you got to... So I took a calculated risk that nobody would realise the grotesque insult I had done to Lafite, but they did. Stephen Miron did, Anton Rupert did, other Dunhill members.
You're not on an official watch list in France.
Well, that's what they said. I said, well, the only way to resolve it, I said, is that I'll need Lafite to send me a case of their best, just to make sure that next time this kind of incident doesn't happen. Yeah. So I think I've had a lot of great meals in Los Angeles, and with Simon Cowell and people like that when I was doing America's Got Talent. He's not a wine guy at all. He doesn't care. He'll just have a beer. Literally one beer for the entire dinner. I, on his bill, would be sticking into all sorts of fantastic California wines. So that's the trick. The other trick is just to get around extremely wealthy people, and while they're not really watching, having agreed to pay the bill, just making sure the stuff is on the right-hand side of the wine list.
Which is exactly why I accepted your kind offer for lunch, so thank you. I was going to see your lunch with Dame Joan Collins and raise you my lunch at the Slug and Lettuce in Putney with the runner-up of Belgium's Got Talent from 2 years ago, but we'll leave our celebrities in equal measure. And instead, have a sip of wine to congratulate you, because this CV that keeps rolling out with new editions has another one this week where I think you are now London's premier pet detective.
Correct.
As the new Ace Ventura.
Well, as you know, Johan's grandson mislaid his dog, Elgin, not the marbles, apparently. They'd lost his dog, not his marbles.
Wine-growing area of South Africa.
Right. And so Elgin had gone missing near the Serpentine Lake in Hyde Park. Johan sent the SOS out to a few of us. I take exception to your categorisation of influencers, because that sort of has a Kardashian vibe, but people who had a lot of followers. I've got like 9 million people follow me on X. I've got millions more on Instagram and whatever. So I just did it the full blast, urgent. If you've seen this dog, there's the picture, call this number. Didn't really think about the consequences of putting somebody's phone number out to 9 million people. So I suspect whoever's number that is going to be getting a lot of calls, probably in the middle of the night after this. But actually, an amazing thing happened, is that somebody did see the dog, did call the number, the dog got found, and Johan's grandson was reunited with his first pet dog. You know, we all remember that emotional attachment to a first dog. So, and as a consequence, I was rewarded with an extra shop on day one of the Dunhill Leagues. We think, I mean, you would know better than me, but we believe this is the first time in Dunhill history that Johan has ever awarded an extra shot purely as an act of gratitude.
It is indeed. And I think it's almost all to do with your pet detective skills.
Yes.
And nothing to do with the fact that having seen you being bottom of the field after day one last year, he knows it'll have no impact
whatsoever. You might remember that you were so vindictive in your speech on the first night about my position at the bottom of the leaderboard that Johan, again, unprecedentedly, took pity on me. And the next day I went out and stormed the leaderboard.
Well,
and
I felt I inspired you with some reverse psychology.
I don't mind that. It's a little bit like the Ryder Cup guys. When the abuse was flying, they were all over the Americans. The moment everyone started behaving themselves, we had a terrible singles day. So I do sort of slightly thank you. But yeah, you were put firm in your place. And I noticed you went very quiet when the second day leaderboard came out.
The week is young. Well, cheers, Pierce.
Yeah. Well, talking of the Rupert family, this is...
So this is the...
their best wine.
Very much the flagship. 2015, a super, super vintage for Reds in South Africa.
Absolutely delicious.
And it's had that bit of extra time to just find its feet and settle a bit. And I wanted to pour this partly because Johan is a great friend to us both, and I know you've enjoyed his wines, but also you are a great champion of Bordeaux Reds, even if you're never entirely sure which one you're drinking. And this is in that style very much.
It is, and actually, like I was saying, I mean, you could choose a really good Italian wine, a Spanish wine, a South African wine, that all taste not dissimilar to a good red Bordeaux. So my dad was absolutely right. Always drink the best French wine you can afford. I still think he's right about that. The French do have the best. But I do think that this kind of wine here is right up there with a really great Bordeaux. So, you know, you shouldn't be restricted geographically with your wine. I think that one of the best things I do, I went to Munich for the Champions League football final on my own as a guest of the owner of PSG, Nasser Al-Khelaifi, who felt sorry for me because PSG had knocked Arsenal out of the semi-final. So we end up there. I'm on my own in Munich. And I never used to do this. If I was somewhere on my own before for work or whatever, I would just stay in my room, watch Netflix or whatever, watch TV. You know. And now I like to go out and I just walk in some kind of area. And if I come across a restaurant that looks nice, I'll just sit. And it was a beautiful sunny evening. I sat outside. They had a fixed menu, this place. It was a little like unassuming place. It was quite curious. It had a fixed menu of about seven dishes and some German wine, which is something I would normally avoid, like I do with you at the Dunhill, just in case I get mercilessly mocked. And actually, it was paired to the dishes. And I sat outside there, and there were three or four German couples around me. And we just all had a great time. They had no idea who I was. I had no idea who they were. The church bells were pealing, the sun was glimmering, it was like early 70s weather, and drinking lovely German wines paired to German food. And I thought, wow, the lesson of that is just sometimes just get on Shanks's pony. You know, don't stay in. If you're in somewhere like that, you haven't been there before, well, just get out and just go and have a local experience. It was magic. Very not that expensive, but the German wines were really delicious.
Last year on the eve of the Laureus Awards in Madrid, I watched El Clásico, and I don't think I've ever heard a louder stadium than when Jude Bellingham scored the winner just before full time. And we were done, and transport was hard to get, Ubers were nowhere, and I spent an absolutely delightful hour just strolling through Madrid at midnight back to my hotel. Now, when you live, as I do, in South Africa, you can go for a walk, but it generally turns into a run quite quickly. So to be able to do this was really, really special.
And Madrid, I mean, really comes alive at midnight, right? It's an amazing
city. Such
a
beautiful city.
Well, talking of Madrid, it just reminded me that Portuguese wine, right, I never really knew much about. And the first time I interviewed Cristiano Ronaldo was in Turin when he was playing at Juventus. And he turned up with a bottle of Portuguese wine. And he said, I know you like your wine, I know you like the French wine, he said, but this is a really special Portuguese wine. Absolutely delicious. I can't remember exactly what it was, but I could tell you it was right up there with this, or, you know, it was a really high quality wine. So I do think most, well, not most countries, but a lot of countries have really excellent wine if you know what you're doing and what you're looking for.
I am very much in agreement. We do have a rather nice lunch to get to.
But
as we wrap up, I think most people from a wine perspective would see Piers Morgan as a Cabernet Sauvignon grape, quite robust and smooth and, most importantly, very thick-skinned.
So not corked, then?
Well, we'll leave that to the day in question. I do wonder, though, because of the outside. Now, we've got to know each other a little over the years, but you know, Piers Morgan is always happy to get into an argument or fiercely debate.
Oh, just happened again.
I wonder, though, is there an element of the Pinot Noir inside? Is there that softer side?
Not really, no. I'm afraid what you see is what you get. I always say to people, you can love me or hate me, I don't really care. But you can never argue that I'm not authentic. I mean, I think, you know me a bit now, I think I'm exactly the same in real life as I am on camera. Because I think there's a real power in authenticity. You're never going to please everybody, ever. But if you're authentic, at least you'll please yourself, right? You're not trying to be something you're not. And I think authenticity in life, and I think of all the people I really admire, look at someone like Johan, right? One of the most authentic people you'll ever meet. You know, when I watch Johan in the Oval Office, at the White House with Donald Trump talking about the issues in South Africa, the way he went about that was so classic Johan. Right? He wasn't going to toe the line. He wasn't going to just say what people thought he should say. He was going to say what he actually thinks. And he didn't mind if he upset people. I thought that's authenticity right there. And I think that to be authentic, wines in a way, it's the same, right? A truly authentic, great wine is authentic. You know, and I remember, I might have told this last time, so forgive me if I'm repeating myself, but one of the most magical experiences I ever had with wine was I had an agent, he'd sadly died a few years ago, called John Ferreter, and he'd been at William Morris. And it was just a very poignant journey we went on because he'd cajoled me into ditching my other agent to go with him by sending me a 4 a.m. email saying, "Dear Piers," when I was on America's Got Talent, number one show on American television. And he said, "Dear Piers, your name has not been mentioned on this continent in 3 months. Great agenting. Yours, John." I was seething when I read it. And I thought, he's probably right. So I went with him. And we went on an amazing journey. And the kind of culmination of it, he put me on Celebrity Apprentice, and I ended up winning the first season of that. Donald Trump was the host. I became friends with Trump, a friendship that's endured, albeit with a few rocky patches to this day. So a lot of consequences from going with John. And the biggest thing he did was he got me to replace Larry King at CNN. So Larry King was the preeminent interviewer in America. And the idea that a guy half his age with an English accent was going to replace him seemed completely absurd. But somehow John managed to make this happen. And I said to him, if you do this, if you get me the Larry King gig, I said, I will get a bottle of the greatest wine ever made and we'll drink it together as we sign the contract. So we were in Cut Restaurant, which is at the Beverly Wilshire Hotel, the Pretty Woman Hotel in Los Angeles, where I was living. I lived there for 2.5 years over a 6-year period. I do recommend that, by the way. And we were in there, and it was the days, it was back in 2010, and contracts were faxed in those days. So it was faxed to the concierge, and it was brought to the table on a kind of silver salver. And I bought a 1961 Chateau Latour, which to me, I think is the greatest wine ever made. Although the 59 Latour has a little chat. And we'd had it decanted, because I knew the contract was coming. And we spent about an hour and a half just very slowly savouring every drop of this bottle. And I'll never forget it. It was one of the most magical wine experiences because of all the context. Again, we're in a great restaurant, eating great steak. It had been beautifully decanted. It was drinking absolutely perfectly. It was everything I'd build it to be. John loved his wine, loved his California wine mainly, but he just thought this was an amazing thing. And that shared experience, which I think what you were getting at earlier about, you can have a bottle of wine, but if you're having it on your own, it's kind of, what's the point? You know, it's like you can drink a 61 Latour on your own, but why would you do that? But to do it with a great friend who just pulled off a miraculous deal for you in the middle of Hollywood, you know, on a balmy night, it's that kind of memory. That for wine, for me, when I think back about the map of my life, wine can be placed in all the key moments of that. And that would be probably top of the list.
Yeah. I will prepare the greatest bottle of South African wine ever for when Dan Really Likes Wine Uncensored kicks off.
Yes, you know what?
Dan and Piers take to the
Why
wine
not?
With wine.
Why not the two Dans?
in wrapping up, you have got new book on the way, the one that chronicles your insomnia, as I mentioned last night.
Woke is dead.
That comes out soon. I'm not sure quite where you find the time to get all of this done. So it's probably a grand act of AI. It's undoubtedly going to storm the bestsellers. Very quickly, the snapshot of this, and not so much what is in the book, but what drove you to write it.
Well, I think that I wrote a book called Wake Up 4 years ago, and it was a clarion call from me, who's probably more liberal than I am anything else, certainly in terms of my social values, to my liberal friends, is if you don't wake up and stop this woke insanity, whether it's the constant virtue signalling, the kind of DEI madness that placed, you know, mediocrity above meritocracy, whether it was the trans athletes in women's sport, which everybody with half a brain knows is completely wrong and unfair. And you don't have to be transphobic to think that. You can just be perfectly like, no, look, I've got, like, people can be whatever they want. But what you can't do is trample on women's rights in the process. It's just not acceptable. So I went through it all and I thought, you know what? We've gone on this period of utter madness. And the vast majority of people don't think that way. But they were kind of bullied and traduced into thinking that way. And I just thought, okay, I'm going to write a book that's going to detail all the most egregious examples of how this insanity played out. And then the inevitable consequence, which was Donald Trump getting re-elected. You know, because as he said in his victory speech, there was a core of common sense underpinning a lot of what he does. You don't have to like Trump to think that that's probably true. And there was a core of a lack of common sense for the Democrats. And we've seen it here in the UK as well. And so my presumption is that most people do not have anything in common with the woke mind virus, as Elon Musk puts it. They actually have more in common with common sense. And if 2 + 2 = 4 and someone says it's 5, you should be able to look at someone who says 5 and go, well, that's ridiculous. Not, well, if I don't say 5, what happens to me? We're going to fire you, shame you, bully you, maybe even shoot you, right? Because you're not going along with our worldview. So that's the pretext of this book. But it also has a bit of the cavalry's coming. I think we've seen the peak of it. We're seeing the end of it now coming, because people are doing stuff that is immediately getting backlash now when they go down this road. And I think we'll end up in a happier place where hopefully you and, you know, people like us can have spirited debate. I'm sure we will over lunch and argue about stuff, but we carry on having a few drinks and stay friends. And it should never affect things like that. Everyone should have an opinion and be able to express themselves without fear of being cancelled or shamed or whatever it may be. That's what this book is about. So if you agree with that, then go on to Amazon and put your order in. Dan, I'm expecting you, after I did this for nothing, to put a very big order in.
This is your big break, Piers Morgan. All right, I shall get a hold of a copy, because it looks quite absorbent, and make sure that I've got a bottle.
You know what, if you buy 100 simply with a view to wiping your backside, that's fine with me.
Yeah, it's still numbers
good
in the back.
I don't care.
I shall read it paired with a great bottle of South African wine, and I shall look forward to that. Piers, thank you. I leave you with an invitation. I know you travel the world at the invitation of supermodels and world leaders and rock stars on a weekly basis.
I do.
But there are some of, and I say this objectively, some of the great wineries of the world in South Africa, not just in terms of the wine, but the restaurants on them, the views, they're glorious. When there is a gap to that schedule, please know that we would love to have you over,
I
show you a bit of the South
that.
African wine world. And
well, is there a proviso in the contract, if I do that, that I won't get eaten by a lion?
I think generally our lions have pretty good taste, so you should be fine. I look forward to seeing you in South Africa, Piers. There we go. And I have to do this because this is the rider from all six of his global agents, YouTube starlet and influencer, Piers Morgan, joining us on Dan Really Likes Wine, showing, amongst other things, a love of wine, even when he's not 100% certain exactly what he's drinking. Cheers.
Cheers.